Welcome to the Holistic Health Podcast, where we delve into topics that bridge wellness and science for the skin, gut, mind, body, and soul. This podcast is brought to you by Gvome, where we believe that each of us has a unique ecosystem and path to reach our full vitality.
I'm your host, Dr. Raja Sivamani, an integrative physician and an Ayurvedic practitioner. Gvome is the notion that our jiva, the Sanskrit word for vitality and the essence of life, merges with our many ecosystems that compose our biome to form our unique jivome. This podcast is meant for educational and informational purposes only. None of the information presented here are a substitute for professional medical care, and this podcast does not constitute medical advice. If you have a medical concern, please consult with your physician. Today, I'm really excited. It's one of the most fun immunologists that I've ever met. She makes it really easy to understand microbiology, immunology, all those little bugs that have been bugging you aren't so hard to understand once we get going with a conversation with Dr. Heather Zwicky. She's a professor of immunology. She's at the National University of Natural Medicine up in Portland, Oregon, and she's done quite a bit there. She launched the HealthGut Research Institute. And so she's been involved in research for many, many years, and she really knows how to take really esoteric topics and make them understandable. And today we're talking about probiotics and how they might interact with your food, something that a lot of us think about, and probably a lot of you are taking probiotic supplements. But did you know that the food that you eat might impact how those probiotics work? So wanted to welcome you to the podcast, Heather. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So Heather, can you give us a background just as a primer, a little bit about probiotics? And then I really want to jump into this concept of food and how foods impact how your probiotics work.
Sure. So probiotics were called probiotics originally because we think about bacteria as being dangerous. And these are bacteria that are not dangerous. So they're pro-human health as opposed to anti-human health. We also think about things like antibiotics as things that kill bacteria. But these are actually live microorganisms that you're taking and putting in your body. So hence the name probiotics. Now, we usually think about probiotics as bacteria, but it turns out you can have probiotics that are bacteria or are even yeast. And yeast-based probiotics are becoming more popular because they've been shown to lower cholesterol. We're using two different species of yeast. The most common one is Saccharomyces boulardii. And you see it in cardiovascular disease studies that S. boulardii, that's what it'll look like on the label. It'll just be an S, but it's Saccharomyces is the name of it. And boulardii is its last name. And it has been shown to lower cholesterol levels and actually be beneficial for cardiovascular health. So again, we've got both bacterial probiotics and yeast probiotics. The most common bacterial probiotics that everybody knows are lactobacillus, and then there are lots of different lactobacillus family members, and bifidobacterium. And bifidobacterium are a bacteria that's really common in your gut when you're born and in your first few years of life. It helps keep you from overreacting to food when you first introduce food into your system. But we now are using bifidobacterium and lactobacillus species in many, many different probiotic combinations. And then you'll also see, I think the last kind of probiotic that's out there that's making a name for itself is called a spore-based probiotic. And so you might just see it as SBP. A lot of times they don't spell out spore-based, but it is out on the market as well.
Yeah, I think I'm really happy that you're going over these different bacteria that are out there, because when I talk to patients, many times I'll tell them, oh, you know, there's a probiotic that I think would be useful. And then they'll say, oh, I'm already taking a probiotic. So I guess, are all probiotics equal?
They are not. So what's really interesting about probiotics is you have to remember, first of all, these are live organisms. So because they're live organisms, they're undergoing metabolism just like we do, meaning that they have byproducts that they secrete, and the byproducts that they can secrete can actually be helpful or harmful. And so it's not a one-size-fits-all. It's not everyone should take the same probiotic, because depending on what's going on in any individual's body, you may want to manipulate what's happening with the particular bacteria types that you can take. For example, let's say you have a lot of inflammation, then you might want a probiotic that actually is going to be better at reducing inflammation. And it turns out that the Bifidobacterium strains are better at reducing inflammation than the Lactobacillus strains. But if you have allergies, you might want a probiotic that helps with your allergic response, and Lactobacillus strains are stronger at reducing allergies than the Bifidobacterium strains. So just simply taking a probiotic is like saying, I'm taking a drug, right?
Right. No, exactly. Yeah. I'm taking a medication, right? Well, that's sweet.
Yeah. And so that's why we also don't say, oh, probiotics work for this or probiotics work for that. It actually has to be a particular probiotic because it's different bacteria in different combinations, typically in the average probiotic. Usually you're going to see between 4 and 10 strains of bacteria in a single probiotic.
Yeah. How do you wrap your head around all those strains? I mean, if you're looking at a label, how do you look at that?
Well, and that's the thing. I really think that we're in the infancy in this field because we don't currently know exactly how to tailor a probiotic to an individual. We know how to tailor a probiotic to an immunological response in so much as we can say, if we put these combination of bacteria together, we're pretty sure it will help with somebody's allergies, or we're pretty sure it will help with their inflammation. But we can't tailor it to an individual and which bacteria would be best in their particular gut.
What's your take on, for starters, functional foods, where I think the idea is a lot of these fermented foods, I should rather say, where you have the probiotic along with the food. And then I wanted to then go from there to talk about how you pair foods with probiotics. Just, you know, if you're taking a probiotic supplement, how does the food that you eat impact that? But can you talk about fermented foods? You know, what's your take on fermented foods? Is that a great way to get enough probiotics in your system?
Yeah, sure. So there's a lot of fermented foods out there. And we think of fermented foods as things like sauerkraut, yogurt, cottage cheese, kefir, and the beverages, kombucha. Those are all fermented things that people take. In Hawaii, poi is a fermented food that people will eat. And these foods feed the bacteria as well as you as a human. So you're simultaneously providing a food for the microbes as you're eating them. So are they a good source of probiotics? They are. They're a very good source of probiotics. Now, I say that, and then I'm going to backtrack for a minute because I will also say that a lot of the yogurts are very high in sugar. So while they might be a good source of probiotic, they're also like eating candy, and they can totally spike your blood sugar. And if you have high blood sugar to begin with, you may not want to eat a dairy-based probiotic. You might instead switch to something that is more like kombucha or sauerkraut if you prefer to get your probiotic from a food as opposed to a capsule. So the advantage is that because there is a food there, you tend to have more live microorganisms. When you take a capsule of a probiotic, usually a good half of the bacteria that are in there are probably dead because they've been in that capsule for, you know, a few months before they got.
You read my mind, Heather. Yeah. It was the question I was going to ask you. Are they live? Are they dead? You know, what is the nuances there?
Yeah, the nuance is that they're probably dead. We did a research project on this
almost yeah.
15 years ago, and we looked at a bunch of different probiotics that were on the shelf. And what we discovered was that roughly 10 to 30% of the microorganisms were alive. Now, because there's so many millions and millions of bacteria in there, that's probably all you need, right? You don't need all of them to be alive. The other thing to remember is that, again, because these are microorganisms, they have already made metabolites. And so when you take a probiotic from a bottle, you're getting the bacteria, and then you're getting all the things that the bacteria spit out, which can be a good thing or can be a bad thing. So again, this is like taking a medication. So we always have to be careful with what we're doing with it.
Yeah, no, this is a great point. And so what's your opinion on probiotics getting through the gastric acids in the stomach? Is there any advantage to or tricks that people use to get the probiotics down there? Are they all dying? And what about spore-based probiotics?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, do any of the probiotics actually survive through the gastric acid? Answer, we don't know. We know that probiotics don't actually stay in your body. So it used to be that people thought that you would take a probiotic and it would help you repopulate your gut. Not so. It doesn't. Within 24 hours, that probiotic is usually gone. And the ones that stick around a little bit longer might be gone within 72 hours. So these are transient bacteria. They're not going to stay with you after you stop taking them. You have to continue to take them in order for them to be there. That being said, are they alive? We don't know. The spore-forming bacteria, the reason that people have switched to a spore-forming bacteria is that there was a thought that maybe they would survive the stomach acid a little bit better. However, in animal models, looking at spore-forming bacteria, again, these are really good at reducing allergies, and they tend to be better for helping people who have diarrhea get rid of their diarrhea. However, if you have an autoimmune disease, it's possible that spore-forming bacteria could make it worse. Hasn't been shown in humans, but it has been shown in animals that if there's an autoimmune predisposition, that spore-forming bacteria is not something that you might want to take.
Obviously a complex landscape there. So in general, how do probiotics interact with the immune system? You talked about different facets of the immune system. You were kind of alluding to that with allergies versus autoimmune. How do probiotics talk to the immune system, so to speak?
Yeah, so there's two things that probiotics do. One is a direct cell contact. So if a probiotic touches an immune cell, it can directly stimulate an immune cell to produce particular proteins that we call cytokines. And these are the proteins that allow the immune system to communicate with the rest of the body. So a direct cell contact, like shaking hands, is one way that they can communicate. And then the other thing that the probiotic can do is it can produce metabolites. And the metabolites that the probiotics are producing can shift the way the immune system responds to different things in the environment. And we think that it's actually the metabolites that may be the most important aspect of the probiotic. Specifically, there's a metabolite called butyrate. And this metabolite has been shown to be highly anti-inflammatory. So if the probiotics produced butyrate before they died, and you might just be taking butyrate in your capsule of probiotic, right? So that's a potential.
That's a good point.
Yeah. And it turns out butyrate's beneficial. Otherwise, you might have a probiotic that makes it into your intestine and it binds. It doesn't have to be alive to do this. It can bind to a receptor on an immune cell and it can trigger that immune cell to produce anti-inflammatory messengers. So a couple different ways that it can interact with the immune system. In fact, we're thinking that interaction with the immune system is probably the primary thing that the probiotic is doing, whereas historically people thought repopulation was what the probiotic was doing, and we've shown that that's not the case.
Yeah, those probiotics don't really take hold, do they? Do they stimulate other bacteria to overgrow? Is there any sort of, I hate to call it prebiotic, but is there any sort of, I guess, collegial biotic effect that they have on their neighboring bacteria as they go down, even if they're dead or alive?
Well, the thought isn't that they stimulate. The thought is that they might compete out pathogenic bacteria. So even if they're not alive, they can act as Velcro and bind to receptors such that pathogenic bacteria can't bind there. And that thought is still prevalent within the immunology community that perhaps probiotics are binding to these receptors so pathogens can't bind.
Yeah, this is a fascinating area. And it brings us to the question that I'm really interested to get your thoughts on. How about the foods that we eat? Because obviously we're taking these as supplements and we're all eating a diverse variety of foods. How do foods impact how our probiotics are working?
Foods have an enormous impact on how probiotics work because remember, as live organisms, they're eating too. And it's been shown that, for example, this was a Bacteroides species, where the same species of bacteria, when eaten by a vegetarian, caused an anti-inflammatory response, but when eaten with carnivore, eaten with meat, in the same individual, can cause a pro-inflammatory response. So depending on what you eat, it will change what the bacteria is doing. They're responsive to their microenvironment. what that tells us is that we have to be conscious of what it is we're eating with this bacteria, because you're feeding them. And just like you might have a negative reaction from some foods, the bacteria will have a negative reaction from some foods as well. So the foods that they love, the foods that cause the positive reactions, are the foods that we call prebiotics. And those prebiotic foods include things like onions, Jerusalem artichoke, leeks, bananas, asparagus, you know, some of these foods that are very high in fiber. And those high fiber foods like barley, some beans, those sorts of things are really good for keeping those microbes happy.
This is something that a lot of people might not think about. And even when I talk to patients, after I spoke to you before, Heather, I probably didn't have conversations around their diet specifically with their probiotics, but now I've started shifting that. So what about the folks that are drinking a lot of things like dairy or eating meats, whether it's red meats or white meats like, you know, turkey, chicken? How does that influence the probiotics? Do we know?
You know, we assume that lactobacillus does well with dairy simply because the lactobacillus breaks down dairy. That's why it's called lactobacillus. With respect to meat, most probiotics don't like meat a whole lot. And we are learning that red meat is worse. And, you know, there's not great comparative effectiveness studies with every kind of meat, but there have been studies showing that fish is fine, that actually they like the fish oils. So fish is good and fatty fishes are great, which makes sense. It's also just considered a healthy diet. If you are eating a lot of sugar and eating a lot of trans fat, don't even bother taking a probiotic, because the probiotic is going to be so unhappy, it will just continue to do damage, just like the sugar and the trans fats are.
So don't feed the probiotic a bunch of candy or a bunch of trans fats
No.
if you're going to take probiotics. So what kind of foods, do you have any foods, just a rule of thumb, that are really rich in trans fats that you tell people to stay away from?
Yeah, all of those baked goods that you can buy at the grocery store that stay on the shelves for you know, months and months and months, those are the ones to stay away from. I know, I love the goldfish too, but don't eat them. They're not.
Don't take away the goldfish. It's my only semblance for fish oil. I'm vegetarian.
Yeah, right.
Oh, well.
Yeah. You know, that's the thing, is a lot of people think when they hear trans fats, they think French fries. But when we're talking trans fats, we're talking about a particular type of fat that is solid at room temperature. And those are the fats that are in all of the crackers and Little Debbie Swiss cake rolls. You know, those sorts of things. Those are just, they're not healthy. You knew they weren't healthy, and your bacteria know that they're not healthy too.
And I knew that they weren't healthy too. So you just reminded me of that. So I appreciate it. And many of these are processed foods. And I know we've always talked about, and many people we talk to say, get away from processed foods, move towards whole foods. When it comes to fruits, you know, you talked about sugars. Should people worry about fruits? Are those sugars any better for you than, say, the refined sugars that are in processed foods?
You know, if you break it down, a sugar is a sugar is a sugar. However, when you eat sugar in a fruit, the fiber is there. And that fiber actually changes how we digest the sugar in the fruit. So if you're looking at a good prebiotic fruit, you're looking at a banana or an apple. Those are your high fiber fruits. Also like a mango, although a lot of people don't have access to mangoes and those sorts of things. Berries are completely different. Berries don't have as much fiber as fruits do. They're healthy for other reasons, but they're not healthy because they're a good prebiotic food.
And what's your take on juicing? Because a lot of folks are moving towards juicing, and not only for just juicing's purposes, but in smoothies, a lot of people will put juices in. Is that a negative situation because you're pulling out a lot of the fiber that normally would come with the fruit?
Yeah, so it depends on how you juice, right? So my family juices, but we throw the entire apple in minus the stem. You know,
there you go.
If you're using apple juice as a dilutant in your smoothie, that's no good. Then you're just giving yourself sugar. So if you're going to use apple, use the whole apple. If you're going to use a banana, use the whole banana or the whole cherry, not cherry juice or apple juice. Because once you lose the fiber, then you might as well just be drinking a soda that's not carbonated.
And then if you have a probiotic that's spore-based versus a bifidobacteria versus a lactobacillus. When you're talking about foods and meats, are any of them more, do they play better in the sandbox, or is it kind of across the board? Negative foods are just negative across the board.
Negative foods are pretty much negative across the board.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. And if somebody's getting started with a probiotic, I almost always will start them with a bifido-based probiotic, simply because the vast majority of Americans have inflammation. And bifidobacterium are really good at helping with that inflammation. And then as they move on, I'm not a person who says stay with the same probiotic for your entire life. I actually recommend people switch it up. I say, because that's what's happening in your gut all the time. The more diversity, the better. So you use your probiotic for a month, and then you switch to a different probiotic for the next month. And maybe you have a third probiotic for the third month, and then you go back and rotate through. And the reason for that, again, is that that diversity is actually good for your system.
And Heather, how do you decide on quality of a probiotic? There's so many brands when you go into the store that you can see on the shelf, and you know, some are refrigerated, some are not. What is your approach to saying, okay, this meets certain quality principles that I would say is going to be high quality?
So I'm a snob. So I love third-party tested products. And I actually don't tend to buy my probiotic at the grocery store. There's a couple of online companies that I very much like. There's a company called Claire that makes a fantastic high-quality probiotic. And there's a company called Genestra that makes something called HMF powder, which again is a super high-quality product. And both of these are probiotics that have been studied in clinical trials, which those are the products I want to use, because I know that they're going to be reproducible and high quality. The other thing is that some of the products that you can buy on the shelf have prebiotics in them. And if you're somebody who takes a probiotic and it gives you terrible gas or bloating, you're probably reacting to the prebiotic in the supplement. And you should look for a probiotic that doesn't have prebiotics in it, if that's the case.
All fantastic tips. Heather, any other tips that you tell people when they're looking at probiotics? Any kind of practical approaches on how to start with the, say you've got your lactobacillus or a bifidobacteria, how do you tell people to change their diet along with it, especially if they're, you know, heavily eating meat and whatnot? Do you just tell them to cut it all out all at once? Any practical tips for the general user?
No. One step at a time, one meal at a time, and every day is a new day, right? So my personal strategy, I guess, would be to start with sugar and start by limiting your sugar. And then, you know, if you have a day where you have sugar, okay, no problem. But then the next day, try to limit your sugar. And when I'm saying sugar, I'm not saying fruit, I'm saying sugar, right? So get rid of the soda, get rid of the candy, get rid of the cookies and the cakes, and just one day at a time. And then once you feel like you've got the sugar thing under control, then start the trans fat and get rid of the trans fat next. And again, one day at a time. And with cutting meat, if you're going to reduce meat consumption, again, I do it one meal at a time. Like, see if you can get rid of meat in your breakfast, and then see if you can get rid of it in your lunch, and then switch your dinner to fish and see if you actually feel better, because most people will.
Sounds like common sense, but it's always nice when someone puts it together in a nice little package to give us common sense snippets. So it's always fun talking to you. Appreciate your time today, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
This is the Holistic Health Podcast, brought to you by Gvome, where we believe that cultivating a healthy ecosystem unique to you is important to living vital and living well. Don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to our channel, and be sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and visit us at gvome.com. Check out our membership options to take your health to the next level.